Hello and a very happy new year to you. Welcome to the Archers podcast, where we dig deep into the week's events in Ambridge with help from cast members, writers, advisors and experts. You'll always find us on BBC Sounds, but this week, 75 years to the day since the Archers started, as a special treat, we're on Radio 4 as well. If you've just tuned in and haven't listened to Thursday's episode of The Archers or the Truth and Lies special yet, here's your spoiler alert, as we're going to be discussing events from Boxing Day to New Year's Day. We've got a lot to talk about. I'm Emma Freud, and this is The Archers podcast. So, in this dramatic week, just as we thought George couldn't spiral any lower, the Grundys discovered he'd been physically taking out his anger on his stepfather, Ed, and collectively threw him out. Hating all the drama, his little sister, Kira, ran away from home, while George's girlfriend, Amber, sought solace in his best friend and cousin, Brad. And in the straw that broke the camel's back, or the bottle that broke the ex-con's head, George has now been violently assaulted and left for dead. But who did it? In today's episode, we're going into full-on detective mode to see if, from a surprisingly long list of suspects, we can get any closer to uncovering George's attacker. I have with me the man behind this incident. He's Dave Payne, Ambridge's answer to Agatha Christie. Dave's a producer on The Archers, co-creator of the entire George storyline over the last 2 years, and writer of the brilliant special episode, The Archers, Truth and Lies, that you may have just heard on Radio 4, where Ambridge residents were interrogated about their possible motives for attacking George. Dave, The Archers has really gone Cluedo this week.
Absolutely.
Why did you think that would be appropriate for New Year's Eve? And goodness me, you were right.
Thank you. Do you know what? It's sort of everything we do on The Archers always kind of story-based and character-based first. So when we sent George to prison, I was immediately trying to think of what would happen when he came out. And I knew that he was coming out a couple of months before the 75th, and we wanted him to have a very different experience to, say, Freddie and Helen. So it was always kind of my plan that he would come out kind of worse, but that we would sort of understand in some ways why that was. And then when I clocked that it was 2 months to the 75th, I thought, oh, what can we do that's interesting? And how is George going to kind of react to his, you know, coming out of prison because everyone hates him? And suddenly I just thought, ding! Everyone hates him. But it wasn't like sort of sometimes I think that they do in dramas where they kind of orchestrate motives for people that wouldn't naturally have one.
They were all there.
They were all just there. And Jeremy said to me when I pitched it to him, he said, oh, just go away and kind of write me a list of who you think the suspects are. And literally without putting any thought into it whatsoever, I came up with 23.
23?
Just like literally just off the cuff.
This is delicious. Helping us sift through the evidence is journalist, Vogue columnist, author and massive Archers fan, Nell Hercule Poirot Frizzell. Nell is a diehard Ambridge lover. Did you ever think a whodunit could be peak Archers?
It's the best idea that I've never had. A big country house, cupboards full of chemicals, sheds full of tools, suspicious locals, and the detective with a luscious moustache, and that's just me. I mean, of course, it's a brilliant idea, and it's cosy crime, but it's also rural horror.
Completing our detective trio is Helen Sherlock Holmes Longworth, known in Ambridge as Hannah the Pig Woman Riley. Helen, this is odd. You're never told storylines in advance. You discover the plots when the scripts arrive through your letterbox.
That's right, yeah.
Were you shocked to find out that you're a key suspect?
I really was, yeah. Although, you know, we've had a long-standing thing, me and George, so maybe not, but this week has just been sensational, just absolutely amazing.
Do you know who did it?
No, I've got absolutely no idea.
Because that bit hasn't been recorded yet, so none of the cast would know.
No, but that's wonderful, because as a listener, I'm as desperate to know as everybody else.
Thank you all. On every episode of The Archers podcast, we discuss one scene of the week. So today I've chosen the moment that the Grundys finally confronted George about his aggression and his last remaining support base chucked him out. We've all felt it coming for months, but it was still a shock when it happened.
I'm only here because you couldn't decide which brother to screw.
Right. You apologised to your mother
No.
What's the matter with you?
It's okay. He can think what he likes.
But it's not right.
All your mum's ever done is care for you and look after you.
Oh, no, she's a saint.
I mean it. Don't push it, lad.
Just like Nick was. She never hit anyone.
George.
She never thumped me when I was a kid.
No, shut your mouth.
But we don't talk about that. Not now she's corked it.
Stop that.
Best thing that nasty cow ever did. Amber.
I'm sorry. I have to go.
What do you mean? Go where?
I don't know.
Amber!
Don't you touch me!
Let go of her.
But I ain't doing nothing.
Amber, are you all right?
Yes, I'll be fine. I just need to not be here.
Babe, hold on.
Leave the girl be.
What do you think I'm going to do? She's the one who slapped me. Amber!
Ain't you listening? She wants you to leave her alone.
Yeah, but I...
In fact, we all do. Go and pack your bags.
What?
I'm not having you under my roof a minute longer.
Well, we could literally spend the entire programme only talking about that scene. Dave, why, how, what? Explain.
Oh, I can't help but feel sorry for him. I know it's awful. He's done some awful things. He really has. But he never learns. He sort of nearly gets there. You know, and there's that beautiful scene with Angus and Barry, who play George and Ed, where he hit him and then broke down immediately and was just begging for help. And Ed supported him. And he was on the right path. He was on the way to getting help. And if Ed had been in that room, Ed could have said, look, like, everyone calm down. Right, this is actually what happened. But because they were accusing him, rather than to defend himself eloquently, he just lashed out and does what he always does.
My favourite moment was slap, pause, which of the six people in that room did that? Yeah. And then Amber. No, what do you think?
I just thought, yes, it's time for the Grundys to lay down some boundaries for George. Tough love, maybe it's time. But the horse has so truly bolted on that front. It's bolted, it's in a field, it's had some sugar lumps. This is not the time for sort of tough love with George, because as you say, he's rounding a corner.
Helen, what do you think?
Oh, just, it's so well written. All the family dynamics and the fact that everyone knows in a crisis which buttons to push to really get to people. So like when he brought up Will and Ed, but then when he mentioned Nick, that's a detonator, isn't it? You know?
And he so takes after Emma, he has, you know, that real sense of kind of what's fair and what isn't.
Yeah,
yeah.
And what you said about Nick is true. She did hit him.
I'd completely
forgotten. Yeah, she did smack him and was kind of very quickly forgiven. But for him, when he was so young, that's a lot to kind of see his father forgiving her.
Let us turn then to the seismic broadcast event that happened today as 2025 turned into 2026 and George was bleeding out in a field. We got a 40-minute special episode exploring the motives of the many villagers who hated George enough to have taken a bottle to his skull. It was called Truth and Lies. It's an incredible listen, Dave. Congratulations for putting that together. The key suspects were all interrogated by an unexpected detective. What appealed about that format and the way that you did it?
When I first started listening to The Archers, I found it really difficult to kind of, obviously you can't see people, you have to kind of work out who is related to who and how they're related and what their feelings are towards that person. And obviously in TV, you can do that with a look in like one scene, it's dead easy. So I really wanted something where you could kind of learn who everyone was for new listeners. And I just wanted to kind of really turn the screw on everyone and learn things about them that we'd kind of forgotten about or we didn't actually know.
Do you think it works as well for the new year period? Because there's something about the end of the year and the beginning of a year and long nights and alcohol and extremes of experience.
Yeah. Oh, and being locked in with your family. I mean, we're all ready for murder. It's quite nice to hear about someone going off into a wood with a bottle.
I think it is time to start our investigation. And it's a complex process that we're undertaking here because three of us in this studio have no idea who did it. Me, Nell and Helen, even though she's in it. And we're debating possibilities in front of Dave, who knows who did it because he was the brains behind it. So let's go through our suspects so far in short. Okay, so there's Tracy. What's her beef with George?
I think she can see how he's manipulated Brad over the years, mainly. She doesn't like him anyway. I think she thinks the way he treats Emma is appalling because they're very close. But yeah, I think it would ultimately be to save Brad's feelings.
And that he's brought disgrace on the family.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fallon and Harrison.
Fallon, never underestimate the fury of a perimenopausal woman. And Harrison, he's got previous with George.
Okay. Hannah, she's sitting in the studio. He called you a sad act pig girl.
Yeah, he really got stuck in this Christmas, you know, in terms of really hitting her where it hurt, in terms of being on her own at Christmas. But it goes way back to the sausage roll wrapper and the biosecurity hazard. Mm-hmm. That's why she got him fired.
He also got her evicted.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, Associates of Markey. Why are they in the firing line?
So when George was in prison to try and kind of ingratiate himself back in with Kenton and Jolene and kind of prove that he wasn't all bad, he dobbed on Markey's associates at great personal risk and nearly got extra time. So they've definitely got beef with him.
I think what you mean, Dave, is snitches get stitches.
That's the one. So much more eloquently.
Brian and Lillian.
So they're the great defenders of Alice, who has been painted as a sort of saintly figure. And they have sort of, I think, projected all of their anger or disappointment in Alice onto George.
Ed, who is George's stepfather, why might he be a suspect?
Well, he's been attacked on various occasions recently, hasn't he, by George? Or, you know, accidents have happened.
I think he'd forgiven him personally if it was just him, but I think Kira's the last straw.
But Kira's also a suspect.
Potentially.
And why would she be a suspect?
Sick of the drama.
Ed actually said, I'm going to kill him.
Yeah.
I'm going to kill him.
So I know there are 23 you could have had, but my final one for our shortlist is Brad.
How dare you?
Brad. I'm with you. Yeah.
Why would Brad be in the running?
Because he's in love with Amber, I guess. Also, he's just lost it with George. He's just, I think he's snapped this
week. He's held it together for years. Yeah. He holds everything in.
So an event like this in a small community, rather than bonding the community in solidarity, it just fractures it, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. I mean, they are splintered right now. I think it's time to move on to the murder / non-murder weapon. Please, may we have Exhibit A? So we know that George was struck with a bottle, but we don't know what sort of bottle or where it came from or what was in it. At midnight on New Year's Eve, there'd be no shortage of people walking around Ambridge with a bottle of something in their hand. But we were given some clues or red herrings in previous scenes. Let's start with Brian. His Christmas present from Miranda could fit that bill. Do you remember what his Christmas present was?
Aftershave, was it?
Very good.
Thank you.
Let's have a listen.
You're smelling very fragrant, Brian. New aftershave.
Oh, yeah. Christmas present from Miranda. Do you like it?
I think the smell of the aftershave might have been enough to leave George. Has he got a motive?
I mean, Alice. Yeah, his favourite daughter, and George, you know, let her think that she was guilty of causing that crash and she wasn't.
And they just had a massive old fight at the bull, didn't they?
Yeah.
Has he got the means? The
aftershave.
Yeah.
And he'll use it.
So we're banking Brian, but there are other wine suspects. Who else had a bottle to hand that night? The Archers is so good at the long game payoffs. Here's a moment we had no idea was significant when it happened 2 months ago, but which came full circle last night.
This is some trophy.
Isn't it magnificent?
And I love the little model pub on the top.
Oh, yeah.
And did you know we'd be getting those cases of fancy wine?
Ooh, not until we were on stage.
Jolene and Kenton will be made up.
And as part of New Year's Eve, Lillian and Tracy handed out those wine bottles to their favourite villagers. Yeah. Do you remember who got them?
Well, Tracy's family. Tracy handed them out to her, mainly to her family, as I remember.
And one to herself.
And one to her.
Lillian and Justin, I remember.
Me.
Yes, you got one.
I was named.
Oh. Shall we see if there are any others?
I'm so confused. Fallon and Harrison have had their bottle, and so have Joy and Mick.
They have, plus Hannah.
What about your family? You gave them their wine?
Yonks ago. In fact, Debbie, Adam and Rory polished it off before their names had even arrived. And I gave Kate and Jacob one of the spares.
Hang on, those were for in case I'd missed anyone.
And have you?
I don't think so.
So no need to worry. Everyone seems very happy with their free bottle of Chardonnay. If only we could win Best Pub every year.
Yes.
I assume you've given your family theirs. Are any of them here?
Jazza should have turned up by now. And I think Emma's coming down with the rest of the Grundys.
So where are their bottles?
Well, I weren't sure they'd definitely be here, so I took them a couple of bottles this morning. And another for Susan and Neil. And one for me.
It was a surprisingly long list to listen to, wasn't it? And at the time, I thought, why are we hearing this? It does bring us, though, to suspect Hannah. So you got a bottle of wine. You've got a motive. George was vile to you.
Yeah.
You're very much a suspect at the moment. In Truth and Lies, when we heard the extent of Hannah's isolation, was it an interesting thing for you to get to play that side? Because it's not a side of your character we normally hear you voice.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Because I think all of us have a sort of a mask that we wear around the village in Ambridge. And I think that's the case for all of those characters. But it was really interesting when that mask was taken away about how, you know, just exposing how people actually feel, taking away the kind of bluster and the... I think she's super lonely and very, very sad, actually. And, you know, very isolated. And I don't think that would have come out necessarily. She wouldn't let it come out. She wouldn't let that show on a day-to-day basis. So
was that news to you now?
I just thought the truth and lies, Hannah's sort of defence against the detective was the most convincing because she was shamelessly saying, yes, he's bad. Yeah, I hate him.
Let's have a listen to Hannah's vulnerable moment.
When I was between houses a couple of years ago, I went to stay with my mum for a month. Do you know how many people, apart from my work colleagues, even noticed I'd gone?
You don't feel that you belong in Ambridge?
I don't feel I belong anywhere. I never have, really. Even my own mum doesn't recognise me. She keeps calling me Tina.
Who's Tina?
I've no idea. But whoever it is, she needs to feed the cat.
Your mum has a cat?
No. Sometimes it's just easier to take her hand and go there. Some of our best chats recently have been about Tina and a non-existent cat. I like mum's fantasy land. It's nicer than the real world.
And nobody noticed you were feeling like this?
Nope.
Is that what you want, Hannah? To be noticed? George clearly noticed you.
Yeah, well, I guess he did.
Did you hit him?
It'd be ironic, wouldn't it? The invisible woman.
So some of that was news to you as well as being news to us.
Yeah, I think the extent of it. Yeah, although it has been touched on this Christmas. She didn't have anywhere to go. And then I think it's quite proud. So various offers came in of places to go for Christmas dinner and stuff, but she didn't want to intrude. It's been good to play, actually. It's been a bit more to get stuck into.
She's such an interesting character to me.
I think Hannah's also in that very tricky period that I think particularly affects women, which is when your peers start having children, and if you're not, you are left in a sort of slightly untethered place where people don't socially know how to deal with you. Hannah's dislocation is also to do with her fertility, her romance, her career, all of that being slightly at odds with what people are expecting of a woman in her 30s.
Yeah, 40s. I think this is where Fallon's quite good.
Yes.
I've had some nice interactions with Fallon, and that's a nice friendship because they're perhaps in a similar time of life, maybe, I guess.
Dave, are you terribly aware when you're writing that all of these situations that we have are things that you can either challenge or allow?
I think so, yeah. With Hannah, which I thought Helen was fantastic in, I wanted the audience to kind of peel back layers for the characters in that special and give the audience a little treat. And Hannah was one that I really wanted to kind of explore more because she is a little bit of an enigma.
So, Nell, who is your prime suspect and why?
I really do think I'm suspicious about Fallon because of her extremely good motive, which is that George has been sort of lecherous and aggressive and diminishing towards her, which anyone who went to school can remember that sort of difficult thing when someone is sort of asking out, but they're also bullying you at the same time. And he has that flavour to him.
So just to recap, George caused the crash in the River Am. He rescued Fallon from drowning. The crash caused her to miscarry, and she then testified against him in court. And last week, George told Fallon he should have left her to drown. On Boxing Day, Fallon and Hannah both compared notes on their recent encounters with George.
Me, Kenton, Harrison, now you. It's like he's on a mission to rub everyone up the wrong way. And this is him when he's engaged to be married and happy. I do not believe that we should be facing random verbal attacks whenever the fancy takes him. Someone needs to have a word.
What, you mean Harrison?
Oh, God, no. I need to keep them as far apart as possible. Bless him, Harrison's really trying to keep it together, not to let anger or hate take over. And I know it can with him.
I can't believe George said that to you about the crash. Oh, why can't he just disappear off the planet and never be seen again?
So here's a thought. What if it was more than one person? What if it was Fallon and Hannah?
Annie Lennox and Aretha Franklin.
Thelma and Louise.
I think Franklin Saunders.
Yeah, that's probably more like it.
We do have one damning piece of evidence against Fallon, though. It's Exhibit B. With chaos outside, half the village hunting for Kira, and the last embers of the fireworks barely cool, this was happening in the Bull.
Oh, have you cut yourself?
Yeah, I thought I'd clear away a few empties while the pub was quiet. One of the glasses smashed in my hand.
Oh, it's not too bad, is it?
Oh, no, it just needs a plaster. Mm-hmm. Are Mum and Kenton back on the bar?
I'm not sure. I haven't seen them. Oh. I assume Kenton was helping David with the fireworks.
Oh, well, if everyone's coming back in, let's get a move on.
Oh, well, there's no rush, darling. It'll be a good few minutes before they come in and we start serving again. Mm.
Do you need help with that plaster?
Oh, thanks. Yeah, it's a bit fiddly with one hand. Is Brian all right, by the way? Saw him leaving earlier. He looked a bit pale.
Oh, I think he was just a little shaken by his confrontation with George Grundy. Well, weren't we all?
The hand washing? David, I'm looking at you. What was going on in your head at that moment?
I mean, she cut herself, the poor woman.
But it was Lady Macbeth, wasn't it?
Potentially, if people want to see it like that.
There's something woozy in her voice that is also a bit, you know, it's very un-Fallon-y. She's normally quite sharp or upbeat. And I think there's something slightly dreamlike, slight Shakespearean, sort of gone into a fugue state after doing something terrible, ill-lit by moonlight. But who knows?
So Fallon's not accounted for, and she's behaving like Lady Macbeth. Kenton may or may not have been with David. Brian wandered off into the night. Does anyone suspect Tracy?
I would say by the Agatha Christie rule that it's the least likely person, you know, it's the one you don't suspect. It's either Tracy or it's Christine.
Let's ditch Christine for a second, seeing as how she's 94 at the moment. It's just there was a moment earlier in the evening when Tracy said this.
Now listen here, you little twerp. I heard all about your antics at our place yesterday. I know why Amber's back there right now and not with you.
So?
Even your own family don't want you around. So before you sink any lower in everyone's estimations, if that's possible, why don't you walk back out that door and find yourself a ditch to crawl into?
And my case is that is exactly what he did. What about Jazza? He was absolutely steaming when George showed up at the Horobins house.
So I've got a thing about Jazza, which is that when we came across George, he sounded very odd.
Shifty.
But then you would be if you saw a body lying on the ground.
So that isn't what he... It didn't sound like that sort of shifty, though, did it?
He couldn't find his own coat and he was wearing it. There was something very odd going on with Jazza.
And in terms of motive for Jazza, he is protecting three people. I mean, he's protective about his wife, Tracy. He's protective about his stepson, who's been bullied by George for so long. And he's also, I think, now protective of Amber, who's living with him. OK, it's time to give me your final votes for which you will be held accountable. Nell, does Fallon still get yours?
Or Christine, but yes, Fallon.
Oh, have you cut yourself?
Helen?
My initial thought was Markie, but because Emma mentioned him first in the interview, I thought it can't be, because it wouldn't be the person that they mentioned first.
Oh, that's interesting.
That was my first thought.
So who are you going to go with? You've got to pin it somewhere.
I just hope it's not me. That's all I can say.
OK, so in conclusion, Millard, Nell is voting for Fallon. Helen is voting for anyone but her.
It'd be ironic, wouldn't it? The invisible woman.
And my vote is going to Kira. Because literally nothing would cause Emma more pain than it transpiring her daughter Kira was braining her brother, and causing Emma the deepest pain seems to be something that the writers of The Archers most enjoy.
Love it. Literally the reason I took the job.
She's so desperate to rescue her family. We as listeners need to protect her so much. Why is she a gift to writers in that way?
Because she's so good at it. Emerald's just brilliant. She's so, so good at it. And it just writes itself, really. And Emma's such a well-rounded character. I think it's just so easy to know what she would do in any kind of given situation.
The roots of this story that we've been discussing, they actually began 30-odd years ago in the village when the post office got raided and there were prison sentences within the same family and the repercussions. Do you think this event could have as much of a legacy as the post office raid had 30 years ago?
I mean, it'd be lovely to think so. I'd love to think that anything that I write would still be kind of being talked about in some way sort of decades later. So if he survives, it'd be such a huge thing for George and his family to have gone through.
Because we know now that Clive, unlikely, is doing Reiki. So what's George going to be doing in 25 years' time? Astral planing. Who knows what he'll be up to?
Dave, why are tales in this village so powerful?
I think it's like that in all villages. I think there's always kind of, you know, almost like folklore. And I used to live in the village that my granddad lived in. And everyone still talks about my granddad, who died, you know, nearly 40 years ago. So I think all villages are like that.
I think it's because if you listen to it, you live there. You walk around with them and you're part of it. And you make connections to your own families. And it's like, it's just a beautiful thing, I think.
That's almost all we have time for today. My thanks to my wise and sharp guests, Dave Payne, Nell Frizzell and Helen Longworth, and to my producer, Charlotte Davey. We would love to hear who your prime suspects are. Did young Kira bottle her brother? Oh. Was he bludgeoned by Brian?
Come on now,
get your mitts off me.
Dad!
hurt by Harrison.
Well, Harrison was so hacked off he's taken himself home.
Or decked by Derek Fletcher. You can email us your theories and suspicions on the Archers podcast at bbc.co.uk, or you could WhatsApp us on 08000 289 044. We will continue our investigation next week. But we leave you with this rare treat. In celebration of the Archers' 75th birthday, current members of the cast met up to recreate and re-record the programme's first ever scene, set on New Year's Eve around the table at Brookfield Farm. The actors who we know as David, Ruth, Ben, Chris and Pip are playing Dan, Doris, Phil, Jack and Grace. So 75 years to the day after it was first broadcast, his Dan Archer, played here by Tim Bentinck, who normally plays David, toasting the new year.
Here's a toast. Pray silence for the Lord and Master of Brookfield Farm and sire of the illustrious family of Archer. And another thing. Doris, Phil, Jack, Peggy. And that includes young Jennifer and Lillian and the one on the way. Oh, and I mustn't forget you, Miss Fairbrother. Well, all of you. I haven't got much to say, but somehow...
You're going to take a long time saying it.
Shut up, Phil. You're putting me off. All I want to say is, here's to the coming year. May we go on being as happy and united a family as we've been up to now. And may the weather be a bit kinder to all farmers.
Oh, here, here, here.
So what was that like for the actors playing the ancestors of characters that we know and love today? Here are Daisy Badger, who plays Pip, and Tim Bentinck, who plays David.
This is going to sound a bit out there, but when we're doing the Auld Lang Syne and holding hands, it kind of felt like we were conjuring the past and like live a seance and off we go into the past.
The other thing I was going to bring to make it very realistic was a pipe, because I remember when I started in 1982, everyone was smoking. I mean, around the microphone, they'd be puffing away on pipes and cigars and cigarettes. But it was quite funny channeling my grandfather, because it's all very different now. You know, in so many ways, it's different. But in so many ways, it's the same.